So, Eric, what are we going to call this?
What are we going to call it?
Yeah.
Too much amp is too much amp.
I meant our this is going to be an ongoing series where you explain audio to dummies like me.
That's a good one.
Do we call it audiobook? Do we call it
audiobook
soundboard? Do we call it the cause? How about sound advice?
Sound advice.
Because it's like,
it's terrible.
That's sound advice, perfect. But it's also sound advice.
Perfect. Let's do it. Sound that's advice. Awesome.
Welcome to Sketchbook Podcast, a discussion about inspiration and process with artists, creators, and designers. I'm your host, Daniel Montoya Jr. Eric, I'm going to ask you to explain in layman's dumb people terms all of these proposals that have to do with some bit of sound. Because I think there's a lot of confusion, specifically like the Michael Martin one, the impetus of it. Maybe you can explain when we get to it why maybe this rule might be proposed. So let's go in order. Everyone, this is Eric Cosman, by the way. He's wearing a very smart Chicago Blackhawks quarter zip, as we call it, a quarter zip.
Got this at the NHL shop in downtown New York last week.
Downtown New York, not downtown Chicago.
No, see, the Blackhawks are terrible now, and I went in the store, and no joke, a bunch of Blackhawks stuff was like half off, 75% off.
I know.
So I was like...
Next to the Cowboys stuff, I'm assuming.
It's perfect.
Let's That's go. Right. Cool. So I'm going to start us off with brass amplification limitations, okay? Can you explain what it is this proposal really is? What is Michael trying to accomplish with this?
So the proposal is to limit what can be amplified through wireless microphones. So it's not a limit on the number of people that can have wireless microphones. It's not a limit on the volume. It's just a limit of what can be played when a wireless mic is turned on. So this is basically looking to limit putting a mic on one or two players of every part, and then when you play your big power chords, ramping it up and cranking it through the system.
Right. Now, here in Texas, we have a very similar rule. We'll call it the Cedar Ridge rule, because when Cedar Ridge High School opened up, they did that. They mic'd one or two individuals of every section, the stronger individuals. I have heard rumors of a drum corps that had did it this past summer. Is this rule in... reaction to a drum corps that may have or may not have done that this past summer?
Well, there's been a couple people who have done it. Vanguard in 2017 was the first one, but that was kind of part of their show. They kind of had their separate ensemble that was kind of playing against the ensemble, but also during those big hits, like, you know, those mics were on because...
Because they're the best players in the core.
Let's crank it up.
Right, right, right.
So I don't know if it's in reaction to that. I know a couple years... he had a similar proposal limiting basically field mic, shotgun mics usage.
Right.
So it seems to be a similar reason for proposing this rather than, I don't think anyone really is proposing rules. Oh, well, they did that. You shouldn't be able to do
right,
that.
Right, right. Is this because a drum corps could, in essence, mic two or three of each section and then... Everyone's playing a full 2D chord, but those players are kind of mixed a little higher so that the better sounds come through? Or is it easier to go like everyone that's not mic'd play mezzo forte and everyone that's mic'd play forte? Like is
right. I mean, you can do that. You know, it's interesting because this has been happening for a long time, like you said, in marching band with woodwinds.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially when you have a huge brass section, you know, to balance at a full ensemble hit and still hear the woodwinds, you know, any shotgun mic is going to pick up more brass, more drums than woodwinds, unless they're staged incredibly far away,
sure.
Which is limiting.
Yeah.
And my experience has been that even if you have, you know, one person per part or whatever mic'd up, if the rest of the section or most of the rest of the section isn't playing, it doesn't sound right. It sounds like you have a bunch of soloists, you know, you got to think you've got all these different breathing, and you've also got, just the timbre difference when you have a bunch of players versus one. You know, when we were first proposed, I say we, but the royal we, when amplification for keyboards was first proposed, a lot of the proponents were saying, well, you could save so much money because you wouldn't have to buy so many marimbas because you could just have one mic it and then it could be heard.
Right.
And obviously it's gone the other way.
Yeah.
You know, pits back then used to be four marimbas, four vibes, and now it's common to have five or six in each.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because what they realized is, oh, if they're amplified, now we can have not everyone play the same part.
Correct.
It gives us a lot more compositional leeway to write things a little more intricate, a little more artistic, or whatever. So it really opened up doors rather than just say, oh yeah, we can just have one marimba player and turn it to 11.
So if this rule were to pass as it's written right now, how does that limit somebody who wants to have a solo trumpet part for, you know, if someone's doing a show and they mic one trumpet the entire show, and he or she is playing an entirely different line for some reason for 9 minutes. Can that happen?
Yeah, that's allowed with the way I read the rule. Basically, what it's limiting is when there's 2D parts, whether that be a 2D trumpet part or whatever, can't use the mics.
Gotcha. So if it's a quote-unquote solo line or, you know, chamber where it's different, like what the Vanguard did in 2017.
Correct.
That would be fine.
That would be allowed.
Because it's a featured performer wireless microphone. But if there are no solos, no chambers, and everyone's like, let's bump up Billy because Billy's got the best tone, would be against the rules as it's written.
Correct.
Huh. What do you think about that? Are you going to be voting on this? I'm not going to ask you how you're going to vote. Or do you give your expertise to the Boston Crusaders as the audio engineer for them?
Yeah, so I guess let's back up. And for people who aren't familiar with what the rule process, the Janual, is like, it starts off where there's an instructors caucus, which is all the instructors and designers. We meet and we talk about the proposals, and then each corps as a whole gets a vote on all of those from the instructors. And once rules get passed out of the instructor caucus, they get sent to the directors, the board of directors, who are the core directors, who actually vote on the proposal. So it's not like you know, each percussion or each audio or each brass person gets their own individual vote.
Right.
Each corps still gets one
vote. They get one vote.
So I don't have a specific vote.
Right,
You won't see my name by any of them. You'll just see Boston Crusaders.
Right.
So we've had conference calls and, you know, we talk about, you know, what would be best for the activity. What do we think would be best for us? How do we feel about it individually and all that? And, you know, what's cool about the weekend is, you know, you have all the top minds in the activity kind of in the same room at once, and it's not and during a competitive part of the season, you know, like, yeah, we're all there in the bar and everyone, you know, talks, but everyone in the back of their mind is like, we should be beating you, or, you know, all these other whatever, you know. It's just completely kind of stewards of the activity. Where do we feel it should be? And there's a lot of honest conversation and a lot of different opinions that, you know, a lot of people kind of go into the weekend feeling one way, hear these opinion, and coming out feeling the exact opposite.
Now, because there's discussion, the rule can pass but be changed, right? Over the next few days, they can amend it, or make it stricter, make it easier, make it harder, whatever, right? So the rule could pass, but it could pass in an entirely different way that's listed currently.
Correct.
That's good, right?
Yeah, it's great because, you know, It really shows that we're trying to do what's best for the activity. And like I said, if someone comes in with an opinion that no one had, you know, an angle that someone's like, oh, well, if we do this, then that means this. And that would be really bad. It's like, oh, well, we don't want to do that.
Right.
So let's change the proposal so that doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. No, you see the ripples in the water, right?
Yes.
The butterfly in Peking.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Allow for live sampling created in real time. And the way they describe it is allow rhythmic effects such as delay and live looping to be used on the field. Now, are you familiar with Benjamin Potts?
I think yes.
You and Ben Potts, him and I were talking. And he had said that he had talked to somebody, I don't remember the name of him, that this is almost in essence two different proposals here, because live sampling or live looping and delay are two different things, which we know they are. And so it almost should be two different things, where you're trying to approve live looping and then you're trying to approve delay. That's just his opinion on this. So explain to the fans, to the listeners, what looping is. Maybe give some examples, because I know what some examples in the past might have been, and then delay and how it might be utilized and why the Bluecoats want to do this. Or not Bluecoats, Matt Jordan and Vanderkoff, et cetera.
Well, I think, first of all, I'm pretty sure delay effects are legal, or at least aren't explicitly illegal, or at least haven't been penalized.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because there are definitely groups that have done it, and there was nothing sinister. There was one group who did learn the music or whatever. Mm-hmm. And on the bottom, it said half note delay, 100 right. milliseconds or whatever.
So because of where the speakers and
No. They played a half note, and then you heard quarter notes because the delay came and they messed with the delay stuff.
Okay.
So I think this is more clearing up. You know, there's a lot of things in the rule book that don't apply to modern drum corps. My favorite is, for example, cymbals are not allowed in drum corps by the
letter of
the law.
You keep making that joke, and I'm curious. So what does it say in the rule book, or why?
So in the rule book, what it says is you're allowed to have marching drums, keyboard, and keyboard percussion. So it doesn't explicitly talk about, cymbals or woodblocks or tambourines or any other stuff because it was written back before anyone used any of those things. So it wasn't an issue. And, obviously, marching cymbals have been part of drum corps since the beginning. But for some reason, that's the way the rule book was written, because probably no one even thought about it. And now all of a sudden, if you were to look at the rules and say they're using illegal instruments.
So Fellini S should have been disqualified because of the use of the tambourines by the color guard on the field, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Summer Train Blues mix, when they use the crotales or the little finger cymbals.
Yeah. Okay, here it is. I've got it.
Oh, okay. All right. Explain it to everybody.
All acoustic percussion membrane and keyboard instruments, parentheses, those not needing electricity to generate sound, are legal.
Oh, wow. So, okay. So this rule, let's go back to live sample or delay. This is mainly just clarifying or just saying is going to be legal?
No, I was just speaking to Ben Potts. So what this allows for is, during your 12-minute or 15-minute block or whatever, recording something someone is doing and then playing that back.
Right.
So, or using other rhythmic effects such as a tap delay or whatever, which is basically an echo type effect,
right.
But an echo to where it's metered. There's this really cool video on YouTube where this guy does an acoustic version of the delay. So there's a tap delay where, you clap a sound and it plays a dotted 16th note.
Right.
Four times, and it kind of delays.
Yeah.
And so he has this song that he wrote, and it's just eighth note, just bum, bum, bing, bum, 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 bing, bum, 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 bing. But he had four people listen to a click, and each one was a dotted 16th note off, and they tried to play it live. It was super cool. It took them a million takes to get
it. Right, sure.
So this is just kind of allowing for that.
Yeah.
But in real time, there's lots of singer-songwriters and performers, where they start with a drum beat and then they do a bass line and a guitar, and they kind of build on this whole thing.
Right.
So it's just allowing for that.
And that would be the live looping. Now, I don't know whether you can say this or not, but in the Kinetic Noise, did we see or hear examples of live looping taking place?
No, it would have been much harder, which is funny, because a lot of people who don't like or don't want this to pass think that it's cheating and you could just press play and whatever.
Right, sure.
But, in the Kinetic Noise example, we had four trumpet pods that were 20 yards apart each. And if we were to do it how this rule proposed, basically the first section would play it, we'd record it, and then play it back, and then the second section would play, and we'd record that, which includes the first one, and then so on and so forth. Gotcha. So if you have any mistake during any of those pods, for the next 60 seconds, you're going to hear that same mistake over and over and over again.
Right.
because we weren't allowed to do that, what we ended up doing is actually recording each trumpet note individually.
Mm-hmm.
And once one trumpet pod was done, we had a player in the pit play right. the trumpet loop that came out of the speaker, because the part of the gag or the idea was that you'd have this building cacophony of trumpets, and then the trumpets would play something else. So it would keep going and they wouldn't play, and then they play something else.
Yeah.
So once the one pod played, then the pit person played the first pod. And then when the second person played, they played the first two together and etc.
Sure. Sure.
So this just allows to do that live, which again, I think is much more risky. And especially in a live situation, you know, like let's say you've got color guard around and they drop a saber or something. Now you hear clank.
That's
clank,
never happened.
Clank over and over again.
That clank. Is that the sound that it makes?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've never seen people drop. So, you know, that never happens in a drum corps show or a marching band show. So in the looping thing, the key word here would be live, right? Because
correct.
In indoor drumline, indoor winds, at least, you can use a pre-recorded loop as a soundtrack, right?
Correct. You and can just have an MP3 and press play.
And that's what they're not saying for this one, that you can't just go, oh, we recorded this really cool Middle Eastern loop here. That's not what they're saying. You actually have to physically play it. Correct. Then you can record it and live loop that.
Correct. And it has to be that night. So it's not like, oh, we recorded live during rehearsal. It's like, yeah. No, you're on the clock.
Right, right. How would you even know... There are famous examples in marching band of people that like, oh, they like have percussion instruments play, but really you're hearing the loop that they pre-recorded. I won't mention names, but this was in the year 2000. Here in Texas. But yes. You know, I mean, it's happened before. I mean, not just 2000, but anyway, how does someone check to make sure it is quote unquote a live loop and not like the drum corps people, if this were to pass, I'm not saying anyone's going to do this, but that the percussionist, the rack player is like, oh yeah, I'm recording the loop. But really, it was a loop recorded at rehearsal.
Right. There's only so much you can actually do, because to do it live in real time, mm-hmm. or to monitor it, you know, I think that... excuse me.
You okay?
The big... I'm dying, but we're all dying, so it's fine.
Yes, that's correct.
I think people would get away with it a lot until you had a Milli Vanilli moment. You know, like let's say,
kids, look that up.
Yeah, like let's say, God forbid, a trumpet player gets hit. You know, they have a collision with another instrument or a rifle, uh-huh. and they've got blood dripping down their face, and all of a sudden you've got this perfect trumpet line.
Right,
it's
right.
Like, well, he's yeah. obviously not playing it. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are ways you can check, but. You know, I think it becomes more of a deterrent, like, mm-hmm. hey, like you can't do this. This is against the rules. And will some people try to get away with it? Sure. Someone always does.
Right,
but at the end of the day, if it's a rule, then people, if they do it, they're going to at least try to limit it or not do it, you know.
Sure, sure.
As blatantly as they would otherwise.
Right, right. All right. This next one is sound reinforcement. I'm going to do my best to try to read this. This is handwritten. The purpose is ear protection and fans enjoyment. I guess basically they want to put a decibel limit. Am I understanding that correct? Drum corps is too loud, so they want to make it not loud enough, or not too loud, or what is the actual core message behind this one?
The way I read it is that it's not limiting the overall volume of shows, but rather limiting the volume that's coming out of speakers.
Okay. So this is purely
electronic. The sound reinforcement, correct.
Creating sound reinforcement DBAs limits in stadium venues. And I mean, the proposal, and I'm not sure if this is the ones on DCI or not, but it does talk about decibels and exposure to decibels and all that other stuff. But so the question would be monitoring, right? I mean, is Tony down there with a decibel meter standing in front of a speaker or what?
Yeah. Okay. So,
and then is it, and if he's measuring it right there, that's different from when, if you're 10 rows behind, right?
Correct.
So are we going to have somebody measuring every 10 feet? Like how does someone monitor this?
Well, it's really tricky. Okay, if you were to limit just total volume, mm-hmm. becomes easier, right? Because it doesn't matter if the sound's coming from a speaker or a snare drum or a horn line.
Yeah.
If the meter is above X,
mm-hmm.
you're out. You sure. get a penalty. It becomes much more problematic when you're trying to only, hear a specific thing, because sound, sound is really airwaves, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you have a microphone that's right in front of a speaker to measure, you're still going to get crowd noise. You're still going to get the horn line. You're still going to get that other stuff affecting the measurement. Now, you could get rid of that if you isolated the speaker so that no sound could come in. But if no sound could come in, then no sound could come out.
Correct.
Which kind of defeats your purpose of, of having a speaker.
I feel like I understand the reasoning behind this proposal, but it's almost like you can think of 99 reasons why this won't work. Because what if a train happens to go by a show? That's never happened in the middle of a show.
Right.
Or Calum's a plane, you know, a plane goes over. Like, there's just so much stuff that occurs in a normal show. And if you're sitting in the blast zone, you get it differently than if you're sitting in the back. So if someone's in the back, go, well, no, that sounds just fine to me. Well, it's hurting the people's in the, like, it just doesn't seem like there's a clear cut way to monitor this and to actually penalize it and to, Crown's brass line's loud. You know, drum lines are loud.
Very loud.
If you're only going to limit what comes out of the speakers, like, oh, but it's okay if the brass play loud. Well, I don't know.
Right. For me as a sound person, what I have an issue with is, you know, Blue Coats 2018 at the end of the show, we had, you know, incredible singer sing over mm-hmm. top of this horn line that's just wailing.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like you said, if that horn line's playing at, you know, 115, 120, whatever, mm-hmm. and I want to have a balanced singer, well, then she's going to have to be at least that loud, if not a little bit louder, you know?
Because right.
that's the other thing, is that this is to limit sound reinforcement, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. speaks to, you know, amplifying brass or humans. But what if we had a vocal sample, you know, or a sound effect? You know, that's not reinforcement, but it comes out the same speakers.
Right.
The other thing that I think needs to be said is the OSHA. So in the proposal, it lists the OSHA mm-hmm. recommended limits and the NIOSH, which is a different government agency. But it's important to note that those are the average for an 8-hour day, 40 mm-hmm. hours a week, mm-hmm. 50 weeks a year. Okay.
Right.
So it says it's for workers. If you're in this environment and it's consistently above this, then you need to wear a level of hearing protection that brings you below that threshold. It's not a one-time deal. Now, once you get to the upper levels, like the 135, 140, that's where you can have instant and permanent hearing loss, but we're not in that range. Mm-hmm. A better metric than so the way I read the rule, let me scroll down here. So it says first offense, detailed warning, second offense, 0.1 penalty for each violation, third offense, 0.3 continued, 0.5. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I read that to mean that and let's back up. So this is actually kind of two limits. So if it's a smaller stadium, mm-hmm. You're limited from 85 to 95 decibels. I'm assuming dBA, A weighting. So you perceive sounds differently depending on what frequency they are, right? Low frequencies are less harmful than higher frequencies.
I feel the lower ones, right?
Correct. So dBA is an A weighting, which basically means the lower frequencies don't count as much.
Okay.
So which is, because that's, it mimics human hearing.
Right.
So the limits are 85 to 95 dB A weighting for smaller ones, 95 to 105 for larger venues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you read the proposal, it says every time you go over that limit, mm-hmm. You get a penalty.
Sure.
Which to me means that they are evaluating you on peak, which means, you know, if I'm talking right now, I'm at like, you know, 60 dB in the mic, whatever. If I clap,
wait a minute,
all of a sudden, and the doggies.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was sleeping.
People just,
what are you doing?
People were trying to fall asleep to this ASMR.
However, you know, your sound exposure from a one rim shot mm-hmm. is not the same as, you know, let's say that a rim shot's like 115, you know, you're standing right on it, whatever.
Yeah.
That's not the same as if you were to be listening to a chainsaw at that same level for a period
for
of
a period.
Time.
Yes, it's
right?
different.
So when we're talking about health and oral health, it becomes more your exposure over a period of time.
Right.
So there are other measurements that in a professional setting we use that would be much more conducive to, I think, the overall goal. So there's one which basically takes the average sound level over a period of time, mm-hmm. runs it through calculations, and then from there you go in your limit.
Gotcha.
So there's actually a measurement that's LEQ-15, which is basically the amount of sound over 15 minutes.
Oh, which is our show.
Which is perfect,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think if you were to really be concerned about, you know, the overall level of everything, because mm-hmm. again, I don't think you can just do the sound reinforcement, because
right.
I think the horn line, because here's the other thing, you know, we've got in this proposal different levels for small venues and large venues, but does your horn line play quieter when it's a 10 row stadium in Iowa
no.
or Lucas Oil?
No.
No.
So exactly.
So now we're going to have an unbalanced product.
Right.
Because of the limitations.
Sure.
So you become an issue with that. But okay, let's say we're changing it. We're going to do an LEQ 15 mm-hmm. limit for everything.
Right.
And you got to be, you know, below 94 or whatever. It still allows you to have lots of peaks
yeah.
and lots of valleys, but, you know, the average. And right. it becomes more, I think, doable and more appropriate if the goal is really the audience enjoyment and the health of mm-hmm. all those others. I will say this again, it's 8 hours a day exposure and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who watch a drum corps show, they're going to see one show yeah. At most, you know, every couple of weeks or, you know, prelim, semis, finals.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
That's three. So I think what we should really be worried about is hearing protection of the staff and the performing members.
Right. And he mentions that in his write-up here. He's like, well, it's for staff too. It's like, well, if the staff isn't wearing earplugs or ear protection, I mean, I don't mean to say this, but it's your bad. Like, you should know by now.
right. Because unfortunately, many of us know that either I've started losing my hearing mm-hmm. or I have colleagues or my instructors now have hearing loss because they didn't. And a lot of times we learn too late, yeah. you know, or there's a little bit of bravado, like, oh, I don't need hearing protection. It's sure. not that, you know, we're all young once.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, if you look at the sound exposure levels of all the people behind the speakers,
right,
you'll find that it is much, you know, let's talk about the metronomes.
Oh my God.
How loud they are.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's that upper frequency, which uh-huh. is much
which
more
is
damaging.
Piercing. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I proposed a rule last year for WGI that would have required hearing protection, you know, during warmups and shows. Ideally, it would be required for all rehearsals, but there's no way to enforce that.
Correct.
You know, I don't. Yeah. So it didn't pass, but, you know, I would love to see something similar in all of the pageantry, because mm-hmm. it's a real, real concern. And, you know, hearing, once it's gone,
yeah.
It's gone. So I would love, you know, if anything else, I would love for this proposal to start that conversation
right.
of our members. Like, hey, you know, if we're mm-hmm. not strongly encouraging, and if we're not making aware to our students the risk inherent in this activity, mm-hmm. then I think we're doing them a large disservice.
Sure. So it sounds like the spirit of the proposal is in the right place, and maybe it has to be more, because right now, like, the final sentences say, I just want to make sure the fan has the best experience possible. Maybe it's less about the fan, like you said, and more about the performers, right?
Yeah, I think we all want the fan experience to be great. I'm not sure that the fan experience is dangerous from a sound level standpoint. I just don't think there's enough repeated exposure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And even if there was repeated exposure, would it be only those first few seats? But, you know, as we become more professional in the way we handle all this sound, we're using, you know, line array speakers and we're using mm-hmm. the right equipment to where the front row isn't getting blasted
right
as much. And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about kind of some of those ripple butterfly mm-hmm. effect proposals. I think one thing to be concerned about here would be those groups that can't afford the line arrays or aren't using the line arrays.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say these limits do go into effect. Okay, sure. A line array is basically four speakers
mm-hmm.
in an array, and they each have a very specific section that they're shooting at.
Yeah.
Which means that each speaker doesn't have to be as loud
right.
because they're only going to one little Correct. Section and they're pointed right at you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. if you're using a point source, which is basically just spreading, casting a very wide net, mm-hmm. well, you've got to crank it way louder, which means the people in front.
Yeah.
So let's say these limits go, you know, but for the judges, like, line arrays sound better. Yes. Mm-hmm. Can you sound good with point source? Yeah. If you design your show and, mm-hmm. And whatever, it's possible. But if you add these limits,
mm-hmm.
my line array system is going to sound way better
sure.
underneath these limits than your point source system. You, right. you almost might not even bring them out.
Wow. So this is inadvertently could affect negatively cores who can't afford the super duper sound systems.
Yeah, I think so. Which I think with a lot of these sound proposals, that's always kind of, if it's not the top reason, it's kind of one of the bullet points. Is like, not everyone can afford, you know, to have all these wireless mics or to have all these mm-hmm. speakers or whatever. But I think it's important to note that sometimes when you limit things, you actually make it more advantageous to have the more expensive equipment because
right.
they can do more
mm-hmm.
with less.
Right.
That makes sense.
Huh, that's interesting. Does this also, in a different way, try to level the playing field of how loud a drum core can sound? My core can't sound as loud as Crown's, so I'm not saying that's what this proposal is about, but what if we leveled it out so that I can the playing field's more even? Is that what this is also trying to do as well or not?
I will tell you about... That's not really how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I work with a lot of incredible groups and a lot of times same equipment, mm-hmm. you know, and the difference is the players are better.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, even if you have the best sound system, you know, the top groups through the best sound system are still going to sound better
right.
than the 16th place group through a top sound system.
Right.
You know, like, does it help? Of course. Does it sound better? Yeah. We wouldn't be spending all this money
sure.
If it didn't sound better. But at the end of the day, good sound in is good sound out.
Right.
Inverse is true. And also, you know, people love loud, but that's not on the sheet, you know, and it's not really shouldn't be like, you know, if it were a loudness contest, the MA judge would just have a decibel meter.
Yeah. And that's how there it is.
You're 123. You won. Congrats. Right. You know, that's not the game. Now, is it effective? Like, oh yeah. You know, like that,
sure.
that opening Carolina Crown hit every single show, everyone yeah. just arms above
of course.
The air, like, woo, let's go.
Exactly. You know? I would even argue that one wasn't the loudest one. The three below them were louder most of the time. I mean, Crown, Blue Coats, and certainly Vanguard. I mean, I don't know if Vanguard played less than a forte, but I think Blue Devils had more nuance in their book, so they would have lost if it was a loud contest, right?
Right. You know, and it's funny because one of the things that I would love to see that would never happen is I would love for judges' tapes to be either public or released amongst core staff huh. because I think there is such a propensity to think like, oh, well, they're only scoring well because they're doing this and they're mm-hmm. getting so much credit for this.
Mm-hmm.
But you have no idea what they're getting credit for. You're not listening to their tapes. You're not in their critique. You're just assuming.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I think some of this is like, oh, well, they're only getting scored because their, you know, amps mm-hmm. are turned up to 11 and they're,
yeah,
you don't know that, you know, let's listen to the tapes. Let's check the receipts and see whether actually, oh, they play better in tune and they have more
right.
technical nuance and all this other stuff.
Gotcha.
But also yeah. they're loud,
yeah.
you know,
like, but also they're loud. Yeah. That's the thing. It's same thing with high schools. Oh my God. That band was so loud. That's why they won.
They're only one because of their GE.
That's right. Their shotgun mics uh-huh. or whatever. The last one that has to do with sound. All critiques will be recorded. What do you think about that, Eric?
Oh man, I would take a pass on that one because if you record it, it's going to get leaked, right. and I think there needs to be some sort of comfortability of having honest conversations without
yeah.
you know, other people listening in and
right.
and whatever. Yeah. So I totally get the, I will say this, there's no rule against recording critiques. I've recorded critiques before. I know some judges do
mm-hmm.
as kind of like, oh, they're going to be mad. I want to sure. make sure that everything's, you know, mm-hmm. or like, you know, oh, this guy dumped us. I'm going to go in, but I'm going to be professional, but right, I'm going right. to be stern. And
sure.
if, you know, I get a complaint, I want to be able to play the tape back and say, no, I was professional the whole way.
So there's no rules against it. So just if you want to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there needs to be a rule mandating it.
Right. So how do you think it's going to go this weekend with all of these proposals with sound? Let's just focus on sound, because this is a podcast about advice having to do with sound.
Sound advice. It's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to hearing, from the people that propose them, mm-hmm. and people that are in favor that feel differently than I do, and see if there's something I'm missing, mm-hmm. Something mm-hmm. that I've not thought of. But usually they're, even the kind of hot topic proposals, the conversations are extremely collegial and respectful, and I see a lot of people like, oh, Flo should stream that. Like, I would love to,
yeah,
but you would be bored, because it's more like, well, I think for the education of this, mm-hmm. would be great. Well, actually,
so you're educationally, it's not like MGI meetings is what you're saying.
Oh yeah.
Point of order, sir. Sorry. No, Bellamy, shut up.
Oh yeah. Now people only yell at WGI because there's like 60 people in a room and they do like Knights of the Round Table. So you're like 50 feet away from everybody. And you're sure. like, I think they should be able to wear earplugs. What? Exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Great. That's how it works. That's exactly how it went.
Well, thank you for explaining how WGI meetings work. Because everyone's deaf is what you're saying.
What?
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. We have 30 seconds left. This is like a talk show. Woodwinds, are we going to do it? What's going on?
I will start off with this. I was very against amplification of any kind. I was very against...
You've been out of work.
I was very against adding synthesizers, because I don't think there's any logical argument for prohibiting a woodwind if you can just play it with a synth.
Correct.
If we can use an iwi or even just a whatever to make a flute, I just want to hear... I want to hear the real one. I don't think that... here's what I think. I think it'll be good for DCI, because here's what I think is going to happen. I don't think you're going to get membership limits increased.
Nope.
Because adding a bus is problematic. Housing sites are already pretty full.
Right.
Cook Trough is like already too many people to feed. I don't think there's an appetite for adding more people. So I think your top groups are going to be like trombones, French horns. You're going to have solos, exactly. ensembles, special features. Whatever. Where I think it's really going to make a difference is those smaller cores that are struggling to fill up all their bus seats. Now they have a bigger pool to pull from. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And again, if you can play it on synth, just give me the real thing.
I agree.
Nostalgically, I don't like it, because drum corps is drum corps.
Right.
It's brass and drums.
But you came from a corps.
And dance. I was going to say,
y'all started using synths and the whatever that talk is when they were using the
bata.
Yeah, which is, that's still my favorite. Sorry, Blue Coat people. That's my favorite Blue Coat show of all time.
That was a great show.
Caravan. I love that. It was that a
killer
show. Yeah, and just, I love that drum break, because I think it was the same year that Cadets did the shugadaboosh-da-doo-ba-da-doo-ba-boop-ba-doo. And there's one example of what I really like, and there's one example of like, so you come from a drum corps that was
I come from a drum corps who sold t-shirts that said amplification not now not ever.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh my god, do they still have those? What are those worth?
So apparently last year some alumni put out, I think maybe the trumpet section made that their like section
shirts.
So I've got one. It's pretty sick.
Oh my god, that's.
But things change, and I think we've moved far beyond. If you look at, I saw an interesting post today. Someone said, pick any drum corps and listen to a show from 1989, 1999,
right,
2009, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy different.
Correct.
Every single decade, mm-hmm. and I think to think that that's not going to continue to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And again, as soon as synthesizers were allowed, it mm-hmm. just, the woodwind thing to me became inevitable. I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know how many people are going to vote for it, but to me, I think it's a matter of if then when. And if I were king, maybe I wouldn't have woodwinds, but
right.
And if you want to say this is a special thing and it should be this, it mm-hmm. should be preserved in this state.
Yeah.
Okay, but I don't think there's a really good argument. I shouldn't say good argument. I should say like illogical. Well, you can't have woodwinds because, you know, they could never take the temperatures outside.
Right.
It's like, okay, go to Texas and do marching band. Yeah, it's 90 degrees all the way through October.
Yeah, let's shut your mouth.
Practice on blacktop.
Or put it conversely, go to the Midwest and, you know, and it's snowing. So
it's negative 20.
Yes, we know you shouldn't have woodwinds outside.
Right.
What
happens if it rains? Well, if it rains, we're not performing because I'm not having my speakers in the rain.
The electronics.
You know, and the props and the fields and the drill. You know, we've gone, I think I made a post earlier this fall, competitive marching is no longer an all-weather activity. No. It's just not. You can't do it in the rain. You really shouldn't do it in high winds. We've made the decision that we want to be more theatrical and we want to use all of these things, which is great. But if you do, now it's like, well, domes work better because it doesn't rain and there's no wind and all the other stuff. Yeah. And like, that's just a trade-off that we've made.
Right. Yeah. Well, and we're used to it because the kids who march drum corps are coming from bands that use all that stuff. And no one's talking about we're going to march flutes. Like geez, drum corps guys, how are you going to hear the flutes? Like, no.
Well, we're going to mic them all.
That's the thing, right? Well, Michael Martin's proposed no. Like, oh, God, that's a whole nother discussion about the woodwind thing. I mean, the people who are going to use them, the people are going to double on other instruments. Right.
No one's going to cut 20 brass spots or 10 brass spots and 10 guard spots to have a saxophone section.
They'll just go, who plays sax? Oh, and I also play euphonium.
Exactly.
Great. We're going to have you play euphonium most of the show, and then we'll have a killer sax feature because we're going to do jazz here.
I marched one of the best flute players I ever heard. He was in the guard of Bluecoats when I marched. He's like professional flautist now. We're actually going to have him play in the criminal show.
Oh.
Because it was criminal and flute was illegal.
Oh my God. You're going to take your penalty?
Well, I think it was going to be like part of the pre-show. I think we're going to have there are all these cool ideas of like breaking the rules that like never had. Like we were going to have like a pre-show of like Fiona Apple's Screws Criminal playing as like the core set up. And I think he was going to maybe do like a jazz.
Yaz flute.
The old Yaz flute.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have liked that.
I don't think any of us had the technical capability of pulling that off.
Well, they were not going to use amplification ever.
Right.
So
kind of went the other way on that.
Did they?
But so did I. So that's fine.
Yeah. You're now working for the drum corps that used the first synthesizer in drum corps history, right?
Yeah. And Axel F. Let's go.
That should be our theme song.
Yes. It's complete with lasers and bass drums. Pew, 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 pew.
Wow. Awesome. Well, we just recorded somebody's sound effects for a WGI show.
We did it.
Please send your royalty checks to Eric Cosman at thecause@cosman.com. Spelled with a K.
Yes.
K-O-M. Yeah. Hey, thanks for explaining this. I don't feel any better about these rules, but I feel like I understand them better.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Maybe we should catch up after the weekend.
We should. We should get a breakdown and you go like, hey, how'd this really happen?
It's like, well, this guy got really mad and he threw his binder
down. I want you to name names.
All right.
But no, you give fake names. Like instead of Michael Martin, you could say Chris Martin.
No one will know.
No one will know. And instead of Steve Vento, you could say Steve Venti. That's how you don't get sued.
It's all code.
It is. And you know, we never said it was Steve Vento. We said Steve Venti.
Matt Jordan, it's Jack Morton.
Oh my God.
No one will know.
Nobody will know. And we would say William Pitts.
Who knows?
A celebrated actor. I wonder if he'd be making
it. Yeah, I don't know. I gotta check his IMDb page. See what productions he's got.
That's right. He is the lead actor. Has he been nominated for Golden Globes?
I think he's got an Oscar in
already?
The pipelines. Yeah.
My God.
They announced the nominations, I think, next week. But I got a little birdie that says.
Birdie? He's a shoe-in?
Best actor, yeah.
Best actor, William Pitts.
Right to the top, baby.
God. Right out of the gate. Grand slam. Wow.
Cool. DiCaprio's going to cry.
He'll win an Oscar for crying. This episode of Sketchbook Podcast is hosted by me, Daniel Mathoya Jr., and was recorded in Leander, Texas, edited and produced in Austin, Texas. Our logo is created by John Suh of Purpose Designs, and our music is provided by Epidemic Sound. If you enjoy Sketchbook, tell a friend about the show or share a link on social media. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got questions, comments, suggestions, or concerns? Email us at sketchbookpodcast@gmail.com. It too could be featured on a future episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @SketchbookPod and join the Sketchbook community on Facebook @SketchbookPodcast. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Sketchbook Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. Thanks for listening.